In this part of the program, we bring you the story of parents who thought their son was lost and a son who couldn't tell them that he wasn't. It comes to us from NPR's newest program on human behavior. It's called Invisibilia. The show's co-host, Lulu Miller, tells us about a man in a coma whose mind eventually began to function again, but not his body. And because of that, for years, the only relationship he could have was with his own thoughts.
When Martin Pistorius was a little boy growing up in South Africa, he was mostly thinking about electronics.
He used to insist that we buy him all sorts of electronic equipment.
Resistors and transistors and you name it.
These are his parents, Joan and Rodney Pistorius.
He was always going to be an electric man, as he told me, when he grew up. And then...
Martin's life took an unexpected turn.
He had just turned 12.
He came down with a strange illness. The doctors weren't sure what it was, but their best guess...
Cryptococcal meningitis.
Yeah.
He progressively got worse, probably in the second year of his illness. He was sleeping whenever we didn't wake him up. He was permanently lying down in the fetal position.
Eventually, he lost his ability to move by himself, his ability to make eye contact, and finally, his ability to speak.
And the last thing he ever said, because he was still in hospital, was, "When home?" And all he wanted to know was, "When is he coming home?" Sorry.
Martin would eventually fail every test for mental awareness that doctors could think of. And Rodney and Joan were told that he was...
as good as not there. You know, he's a vegetable, he has zero intelligence.
They were told to take him home.
Try and keep him comfortable until he died.
But 1 year passed, and 2 years passed.
Martin just kept going. Just kept going.
So Joan and Rodney and their two kids did their best to care for Martin's body.
I'd get up at 5 o'clock in the morning, get him dressed, load him in the car, take him to the special care center where I'd leave him. 8 hours later, I'd pick him up, bath him, feed him, put him in bed, set my alarm for 2 hours so that I'd wake up to turn him so that he didn't get bed sores.
That was their lives.
Load him in the car, drop him off, pick him up.
3 years turned to four.
Bath him, feed him, put him in bed.
6, 7, 8 years.
This was so horrific.
Joan remembers vividly looking at Martin in bed and saying,
"I hope you die." You know, that's a horrible thing to say. Just wanted some sort of relief.
It was a thought she never would have shared out loud. But it had been 10 years, and she didn't think her son was there to hear it.
"Yes, I was there. Not from the very beginning, but about 2 years into my vegetative state, I began to wake up."
This is Martin.
"Yes, using the grid to speak."
The grid is just a computer keyboard that allows him to quickly choose words and then have the computer read them out loud.
"Yeah."
Though he never regained his speech, he did regain enough body strength to operate a wheelchair by himself. Today, he almost looks like a former athlete. His upper body is really strong. He's got salt and pepper hair, bright blue eyes, and a big smile. And Martin thinks he first woke up when he was about 14 or 15 years old. So about 2 years after he first fell ill.
"I was aware of everything, just like any normal person."
But he couldn't move his body.
"Everyone was so used to me not being there that they didn't notice when I began to be present again."
Though he could see and understand everything, he couldn't find a way to let anybody know.
"The stark reality hit me that I was going to spend the rest of my life like that, totally alone."
He was trapped with only his thoughts for company.
"I would never be rescued."
And they weren't particularly nice thoughts.
No one will ever show me tenderness.
He said they battered him, berated him.
No one will ever love me.
And of course, there was no way to escape.
You are doomed.
Like take a walk or talk to a friend.
You will never get out.
And so he figured his only option,
you are powerless,
was to leave his thoughts behind.
You will be alone forever.
Simply
alone forever.
Let them all just float by. That was his first strategy, disengaging his thoughts. And he said he got really good at it.
You don't really think about anything. You simply exist.
Can you describe what that feels like? I wonder, is it peaceful or...
No, I wouldn't say it is peaceful. It's a very dark place to find yourself because in a sense you are allowing yourself to vanish.
Though occasionally there were certain things...
You can always count on having a fun day when you spend it with the people you love.
...that elicited thoughts he could not ignore. Like Barney.
I love you, you love me.
I cannot even express to you how much I hated Barney.
See, since all the world thought that Martin was basically a vegetable, at the special care center where he spent his days, he was often left in front of a TV watching Barney reruns, hour after hour, day after day. And then one day, he decided he had had enough. He needed to know what time it was, because if he could know what time it was, he could know when it would end. But he was rarely seated near a clock, so...
I would watch how the sun moved across the room, or how a shadow moved throughout the day.
He begins to match what he sees with little bits of information he's able to collect. What he hears on the television, a nurse mentioning the time. And within a few months, he could read the shadows like a clock.
Yes, I can still tell the time of day by the shadows.
It was his first semblance of control. Simply knowing where he was in the day gave him the sense of being able to climb through it.
Yes.
So, now when a dark thought came up, instead of letting it just float by, he would take it on. Try to find some new relationship to it. Like one time, shortly after having the drool wiped from his chin by a nurse.
You are pathetic.
He happened to notice that a song was playing on the radio. Whitney Houston's The Greatest Love of All.
In the song she says, no matter what they take from me,
they can't take away my dignity.
I sat there and thought, you want a bet?
The point is, eventually Martin found a way to reframe, reinterpret even the ugliest thoughts that haunted him.
I hope you die.
He was conscious when his mom told him that.
The rest of the world felt so far away when she said those words.
But he began to wrestle with it. Why would a mother say that?
As time passed, I gradually learned to understand my mother's desperation. Every time she looked at me, she could see only a cruel parody of the once healthy child she had loved so much.
And over time, Martin began re-engaging with his thoughts. And slowly, as his mind felt better, something else happened. His body began to get better. Now, why? This is a long story involving inexplicable neurological developments, a painstaking battle to prove his existence.
Anyway, the short version.
Okay. Wherever you are standing in your life, prepare to be lapped. At age 26, Martin passed a test where he identified different objects by pointing at them with his eyes.
I then gave up my job.
Joan then worked with Martin for 2 years to teach him to operate a computer.
When he gets the tools to communicate, he forges ahead.
Then he gets a job at a local government office.
I wanted to prove that I could do more than just speak words via a laptop.
Eventually, he scraps that job, goes to college.
In computer science.
Starts a web company.
It was absolutely flabbergasting. I couldn't understand it.
Wow.
He writes a book.
He's learning to drive. He always wanted to drive.
He's learning to drive?
Yes.
Wow.
Martin achieves everything he wants to do.
And Martin thinks it may have been his decision to lean into those dark thoughts that helped him to get the very best thing in his life.
Let's just say it. He's just typing.
My wife.
This is Martin's wife.
Jonah.
When Martin talks about me or types about me, always start smiling.
Jonah was a friend of Martin's sister. And the first night they met, they talked for hours.
She would speak. And I would type my response.
And Jonah said the thing that drew her to Martin was his humor about the human condition, his frankness.
If I ask him anything, he'll give me an honest answer. There was no pretense. Okay, well, he's in a wheelchair and he doesn't speak, but I love this guy. He's amazing. Then it just so quickly turned into love.
And Martin, at long last, had no trouble expressing what he felt inside.
My face would hurt from smiling so much.
Lulu Miller is the co-host of Invisibilia, along with Elise Spiegel. It's our newest program. It explores how invisible things shape our behavior and our lives. The program debuts this weekend on many public radio stations, and the podcast is available for download on npr.org and on iTunes. The book Martin Pistorius published was a memoir of what it was like to be invisible for over a decade. It's called Ghost Boy: My Escape from a Life Locked Inside My Own Body.